Good morning. It's approximately 3:30. The program is out of the shadows. But I'm not Don Sheridan. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm filling in for Don, who will not be here this week because of illness in his family. However, we hope he will be back in 2 weeks. Stay with us here on WBAI, listener-supported radio, and we'll be getting into that aspect of it perhaps a little bit later. We'll start things off with some music from Vangelis. and that's Vangelis from a record called Heaven and Hell. And unfortunately, there are no further titles inside the album. I mean, I could have, if I sat down and thought about it, I probably could have come up with a 100 good titles for the piece we just heard. Really moving, stirring, rather strange music, with the willing participation of the English Chamber Choir and lead female vocal by Vanna Verotti. Vangelis, with a little help from John Anderson, although I don't believe on the track that we heard. Again, the record is called Heaven and Hell, and on the other side of this, you'll find the theme. Well, I guess it was before it was a theme to the TV series Cosmos with Carl Sagan. Yes, that came from Vangelis. You're listening to WBAI in New York. The time is 19 minutes until 4 o'clock. And this is Emmanuel Goldstein. And I'm filling in for Don Sheridan tonight, this morning. And I've just returned from probably one of the strangest things I've ever done in my life. Wandering about aimlessly in a foreign continent for 6 weeks. All by myself. And I've returned with a totally different perception and way of looking at things, which I guess I kind of knew would happen when I got back, but how can you know what it's really like until you've been through it? How can you know how you will see things differently until you go through that entire stage and actually see things differently and feel things differently and hear things differently? It's quite incredible. And something I highly recommend to anybody, just go out there and wander around a little bit and stop worrying so much about where you have to be at a certain time. You know, my theory is there's always a way out of it somehow. And true, I might be paying for this for a good long time, but I learned quite a bit, and I'll try to share some of that as the evening goes on. Right now, I'm just going to try to settle back in my own backyard. Oh, Al Jolson. What memories this brings back. Memories I've never had, but good ones nonetheless.
Right under your eyes. backyard.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, it's a wind that I heard once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, is a wind that I heard a lullaby. Someday I wish upon a star, wake up where the clouds are falling high, where travel smell like cream and drop away above the hay. Away above the my chimney top, where all flames somewhere over the rainbow, and I wanted a lullaby. It's happy little bluebirds flying on the way, but why, oh, why can't I?
Firing party, ready?
Sycamore is open. That's how Sycamore opened. That's how Sycamore is. I say this somewhat quietly and without fanfare because...
How are you voting on the gun initiative?
Well,
I'm against.
Because people who like their living green and private don't usually appreciate a lot of fluttering flags and cartwheeling clowns.
There are 17 million adults in California and an estimated 4 million handguns.
Well, that's not fair.
When no more can be sold, you can see that the majority of adults will be virtually prohibited from ever owning one.
When this vacation land is sold out.
That's right. Did you know it gives some people a special property right?
You mean my neighbor can have something legally that I can't?
So if you've always admired parts of Piedmont or Orinda...
Well, you could buy one, if you can convince someone to sell you his, and if you're willing to pay his price.
And regret you didn't buy there 10 or 15 years ago. Sycamore should have considerable appeal.
That's right.
It is a custom community of personalized...
guns.
For the private pleasure of a limited number of families.
It allows people who already own handguns to keep them.
After all, you aren't going to find a finished big blue mountain lake in California that isn't full of boats and people. And surrounded by cars. This opening is just the beginning of something people will want a Sunday drive through for the next couple of hundred years.
don't know how they're possible. They are.
No, I can't say exactly what they are. You just don't understand unless you've been through it.
Thank you.
Well, the man said he was sorry, and I think that's good enough for me. James Brown, brand new from Big Audio Dynamite, and that is the extended club single version of that particular tune. And if you like Big Audio Dynamite, stick around, because I did an interview with them while I was over in London, and I have some rather rare material, so you might actually want to get your tape recorders ready, because some of this stuff is not even on vinyl anywhere, or CD, or anything like that. So we'll get to that a little bit later. We also heard from Negative Land, which is a conglomeration of people. I almost hesitate to call it a group, because they're just so strange. Negative Land with three things, actually. Over the Hiccups, and of course Sycamore. Nice public service announcement for that. And that was topped off with Car Bomb. The record actually comes with a little bumper sticker that says Car Bomb on it, and I just don't have the heart to put it on a car. I want to save it for a special occasion. I don't quite know what. And, of course, Al Jolson up on top here on WBAI, listener-supported non-commercial radio. Now, about that that listener support, we need listener support. Why do we need listener support? Well, it keeps us on the air. And while other stations have commercials to keep them going, we need our listeners to keep us going. Every last listener has a say in this station. We listen to your opinions, and you just don't get that kind of back and forth with a commercial radio station. We are interested in what our listeners have to say, both in a particular program and in our programming in general. So we would like to hear from you at this point, pledging your support. For $45, you can receive the WBAI program guide, known as the Folio, for a year. That's 11 issues, I believe, and it will be sent right to your door or post office box or wherever you want us to send it. You can even take out a gift subscription for somebody else. But we need to hear from you. We need to raise money so that we can keep going, keep bringing you alternative programming. And if you listen to this radio station, you know that we bring you things that other radio stations, well, can't isn't the right word. Won't is more appropriate. And why won't they? Because there's no money in it for them. Now, if you want us to just have programs that will make a profit for us, then you're not listening to us for the right reason, I guess. But if you want programs that are produced without regard for how they will do in ratings and all that kind of garbage that FM radio has become, if that means something to you, if an alternative is important to you, pick up your phone and give us a call, 212-279-3400, and pledge your support to WBAI. We are earnestly in need of people's support to keep us going, and we also want to hear your comments on how we're doing, in the words of a former mayor, I believe. 212-279-3400. It would also make me feel good to see the phones light up and make me think that people are indeed out there. And, you know, the folks that listen to the radio at this time of night, you may not know this, but you take a lot of heat. A lot of people say, oh, only space cadets are out there listening at this particular time. In fact, most people don't even listen at all. And I know that's not true. I know there's people out there working and driving and doing all those marvelous little things that life enables us to do. And all we're asking is that you do one more thing, one more marvelous thing, and it will make you feel good. That's something I can guarantee, because I've done this myself. It's kind of like, I mean, it's a lot like voting. Those of you who voted yesterday, you know, when you come out of the polls, especially when it's for the first time, you feel a certain kind of a glow all over. I saw a picture in the paper yesterday, I believe. Yeah, it had to be yesterday, of someone leaving the polls, a homeless person who had been enabled to vote. He had been allowed to vote for the first time. And it was just such an incredible look of happiness on his face, actually succeeding, actually going in there and voting for the person he wanted to vote for. And what a struggle he had been through as a homeless person, just getting the right to vote. Something that most of us have overlooked because it's become routine, so routine that we often don't do it. I've seen the same happiness on a retarded person who was allowed to vote, and it's kind of criminal that we should even say allowed to vote. Everybody is allowed to vote in this country. That's the way it's supposed to be. But how does this all relate to WBAI, you might ask? Okay, you get that same feeling of satisfaction when you show your support for something that you value, and when you know that you're helping. And believe me, every little bit helps, and every big bit helps, but every little bit helps both financially and as a form of moral support for us. And we want to hear from the folks who are out there listening to late night radio. We want to know that that the radio means something to you. So give us a call, 212-279-3400. All that roundabout speech still hasn't paid off. Not one phone call has come in, so please don't make me look like a fool and have our volunteers inside give them something to do. 212-279-3400. It's not a whole lot to ask as far as money. It amounts to pennies a day, I believe, less than buying a newspaper. And again, you will feel a part of this radio station. 212-279-3400. It's 4 minutes after 4 o'clock, and you are tuned to WBAI in New York, listener-supported Pacifica Radio. And as I said before, I've just gotten back from 6 weeks of wandering around in a foreign continent, and boy, what a strange experience. Never having done something like that before in my life, it's marvelous to have to just be able to do this, just be able to get on a plane and, you know, for a very low price. If you look around, you can find very low fares, and you don't have to worry about, you know, paying for the rest of your life for this. If you're willing to be flexible about it, and I traveled on standby. You know, that's a word of horror for most people, but it wasn't so bad. It was kind of an adventure. I mean, my plane was 6 hours late. Okay, big deal. I got to explore Kennedy Airport for 6 hours. Most people wouldn't like that, but I kind of forced myself to have fun. But the important thing was I made it. I made it over there, and there I was, standing in London. London, England, the place I had heard so much about, the place I had seen on television, and I found out when I got there, it really exists. You know, you never really know until you're there that this place is really here. You know what I mean? They drive on the other side of the road, and they talk in those strange accents, and it's just like on TV. And it is just like on TV. Everybody in England seems to have a very well-developed sense of humor. Everybody from a subway clerk to a teller at a bank to the operator on the telephones, they all have a rather much more relaxed way of speaking to you than their counterparts here in the States. Again, a sense of humor and just an overall pleasant feeling that I got from them. I don't know how an English person would feel, probably just the opposite. And one place that I was able to go to, that I was very happy to go to, was a pirate radio station. That's something that we don't have very many of here. And would certainly make it more interesting, I guess, on the radio front if there were some more independent-type radio stations. But you see, the difference is, in England, the FM dial only has five radio stations. This is in London. So, you know, it gets even less in other cities. But in London, only five licensed stations are on the FM dial. So that means there's a lot of space, a lot of static in between those five stations. And what some enterprising people have done is put their own radio stations on the air. Now, when I first arrived in London, I suggest everybody do this when you travel to any place. Bring along a little Walkman, and at night, as you're drifting off to sleep, just tune up and down the AM and the FM bands and see what kind of things are out there. It's amazing. I mean, you could even do that here, I suppose, but we all pretty much know, don't we, what's out there. Well, the first day I did that, of course, I came across the licensed stations pretty quickly, and they were okay. They were different. They were, you know, different than here anyway, but I wanted something a bit more interesting. One of the first stations I came across was one that was playing all this music. A lot of music. They would just keep playing, you know, over and over again. Usually kind of a disco beat to it. And then suddenly, in the middle of the music would completely stop. And this voice would come on and say something kind of strange, like, you know, "Hey, Joe, you didn't call my beeper yet, you know, hurry up, I can't stay here all day." You know, not the kind of thing that a DJ on a professional radio station would say. Rather vague, kind of coded language, and always the music would completely stop. And the quality of the voice was very poor. It sounded like it was on a telephone. And doing some investigation, looking around, asking people, and delving into the underground, I finally found out what that was all about. And you're not going to believe this, but I'll tell you anyway. They have a pirate radio station. They have several pirate radio stations in London that are actually run on Sony Walkmans, completely on Walkmans. What they do is they play a tape, and the tape is the music that we listen to. And then when they want to say something, they stop the tape and talk through the microphone on the Walkman, which is why the voice sounds so terrible. And then they start the tape again. And that's it. That's the radio station right there, folks. And that station gets out to all of London. Most amazing thing I ever heard. Now, the station that I actually saw wasn't like that. It was a bit more professional, but not by much. The station was run from a guy's bedroom. He literally gets up and does a show. And what's unique about this is he does a show for 2 hours, and then he turns it over to somebody else in another part of the city that does a show from his bedroom for 2 hours. And it just keeps going on like that. It's sort of a step-by-step process. Now, why do they do that? Well, it makes it very hard to trace. It makes it very hard for the authorities to figure out just where it's coming from. I mean, they might be able to find the transmitter, but they won't find the people that are sending to the transmitter. Most incredible thing. And there are stations like that all over the place. Not just in London either, in other countries as well. But it's something you won't see here in the United States very infrequently. We did see Radio New York International a couple of years ago, but that was quickly wiped off because that kind of thing just is not acceptable around here. But I thought you might be interested in knowing just what's going on in other parts of the world. And there's all kinds of other experiences that you can have if you wander around other parts of the world. If you wander around this part of the world, there's all kinds of things you can see. You just have to be looking, because the little things, you know, if you go and you look for the changing of the guard and you take tour buses, you're going to miss an awful lot, because you won't actually be living. You'll just be
you know, a tourist. And I saw them, you know. I was walking around the streets, and I saw these buses go by with a person standing in the front with a microphone saying, look here, look there, don't do that, do this. And those poor people, they looked miserable. I'm sure they were. The bus probably wasn't even air-conditioned. Meanwhile, I was walking around with my knapsack, just walking up and down streets, not really knowing where I was going, but listening to what people were saying and going places I wasn't supposed to go. That's the way you see Europe. That's the way you see any place. And, well, there's more I'd like to get to maybe a bit later. Some things I cut out from various newspapers while I was over there. And the other cities I went to as well. Well, there's just so much to review, so much to learn from. You come back to the States after being away for so long, and it all looks different. It all looks so completely weird. And you see how someone coming to this place for the first time would actually look upon it. You know, everything from the way a phone feels to the way the cars look. You know, even the landscape is completely weird and different. And, of course, the way people talk. Anyway, give us a call, 212-279-3400. Show your support for non-commercial radio, for WBAI. And we'll play this happy little song for you off a live record from a band that is no more. Out of England, appropriately enough, The Specials.
I just crossed the real point. I took my age and time. Look for girls every night. I don't really exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is music from Black Slate. Legalize Collie Herb here on WBAI. And we heard from the Specials before that with Stereotype off a record I picked up in London, which I don't believe has come out here yet. It's the History of Two Tone, the label with all the English ska, Selector, Specials, Body Snatchers, I believe, Bad Manners, The Beat, English Beat and Madness, and all kinds of neat things like that. Double record and all kinds of interesting fun tunes to listen to. Well, that last piece by Black Slate, Legalize Collie Herb. Interesting that I should play that, because I have a little bit of an experience that happened to me when I was in Amsterdam, wandering around the streets of Amsterdam, much like I wandered around the streets of London. In fact, they wrote stories in newspapers about me. Who is that person wandering around our streets, and can't something be done? Well, maybe next year something will be done, but not this year. In Amsterdam, as many of you no doubt know, things are a whole lot more liberal as far as what people can do with their bodies. I guess that's the most blunt way I can put it. Pretty much you are able to do what you want to do. I mean, if you want to mess yourself up, okay, that's, you know, it's your business. Just don't take anyone else with you. It's a good city for whatever sexual persuasion you happen to be. People are open and honest and very generous, too. That's something else I noticed in my travels. People are not skimpy. They give you lots of food, and, you know, in the restaurants or fast food places you go to, they don't try to cheat you or anything like that. Or you don't get the feeling that you know, it's that kind of a relationship. They, you know, you pay money for something, or even if you're at somebody's house, the intent is to give you a lot and to have fun and to hang out for as long as you want to without having to worry about clearing the table for the next person. Completely different attitude, but as far as the experience I had, it seems there was this gathering. Well, perhaps I should say the entire reason for my traveling overseas in the first place was to be part of a convention of computer hackers in Amsterdam. People from Chaos Computer Club and the Dutch hacking group known as Hacktic, and folks from the United States and all of the other parts of the world, England and Austria and you name it. We all kind of gathered, converged in Amsterdam, and just explored the place and traded information and had lots of fun. But at the end of it all, which was a Friday night, actually, no, I'm sorry, it was a Saturday afternoon. Friday night we had a party, and then we did things that night, but things really got kind of crazy the next day when this rich guy, yeah, this rich, mysterious person who lived in the suburbs invited some of us computer hackers over to his house for the ultimate party of the elite few. And I just can't tell you how honored I felt as I made my way over there with a couple of the other dignitaries that had been so honored. As we took the train over there, I just knew it was going to be an experience that I would end up talking about on the radio someday. Well, we got there. We met some of the people there, and we tried to figure out things to say. And once we had done that for a little while, we realized more people were showing up, and it started to become kind of interesting. However, as I've mentioned, the climate in Amsterdam is very liberal, and certain substances get passed around a lot more readily than others. And folks tend to be a bit more creative. So to make a long story short, this person who had the party at his house decided to have a little experiment. They had a one of those machines you hook up to telephones, and you can transmit still pictures to another telephone that has a similar machine. And they were hooked up to California, from Amsterdam to California. I don't know what the time difference is. Well, actually, it must be about 9 hours because it's 6 hours between Amsterdam and here. So it was about midnight in Amsterdam, which would mean it would be about 3 p.m. in California. So what this incredibly intelligent and creative rich person who lived in the suburbs and had all these computer hackers over at his house was intending to do was to give certain people, certain volunteers, a particular kind of drug. Their choice. They had a choice. They could either take LSD or ecstasy. One of those two drugs, okay? They could take either one, and then somebody in California would take one of those drugs too. And using this miraculous machine over the telephone, and using computers too, they would try to influence each other. Yeah, this is a real throwback to Timothy Leary and all that kind of business. And so the nice, rich, creative person asked for volunteers. Now, here I am, standing here in Amsterdam with the craziest bunch of people I've probably ever been with in my life, people with all kinds of different color hair and spikes and skinheads and all kinds of people that, most people would cower in fear if they saw, a group of interplanetary-type people such as these. And would you believe not one person volunteered to be a part of this experiment? Not one person. And you should have seen the face on the poor, rich, creative guy who lived in the suburbs. He just could not believe he had invited all of these computer hackers and strange social deviants to his house, and nobody wanted to take his drugs and participate in his experiment across the ocean and over the phone lines. It was enough to really make you think, to really make you feel a bit sad. But of course, we weren't there to feel sad. We were there to have fun, and we refused to feel sad. We all kind of didn't pay much attention. And that's not the end of the story, unfortunately, because shortly thereafter, the nice, rich, creative man who lived in the suburbs announced that the cookies were ready. Now, I like cookies, I've always have. It's just been a thing with me ever since I was a kid. And when somebody takes cookies out of an oven, I react to that. I react in a positive way. A couple of hours later, I reacted in another kind of a way and realized that these were no ordinary cookies that I had already eaten quite a few of. And I started feeling extremely bizarre, extremely strange, and fast-paced. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't sit still or even think. I had to keep moving and standing up, and my heart was racing, and my pulse was quickening, and people were asking what was wrong, what's going on, what are you, are you insane or something like that? And I didn't know what was going on. When you take a certain strange substance, you expect some kind of a reaction, but when you haven't taken anything to the best of your knowledge, it's the scariest feeling in the world. So I honestly didn't know what was going on. I didn't know if I had been poisoned or if I had taken something I couldn't handle or what, or if I was just cracking up finally. And then I'm vaguely aware of this because when something like this happens, your sense of perception is just kind of altered completely. But I was aware of people acting very strange, people talking extremely fast and being very active and creative and having these impassioned discussions about the C language and the Unix operating system. More impassioned than usual. I mean, almost to the point of arguing to the death about a certain command, in a compiler. That's kind of insane. And so as I realized that all these people were acting totally bizarre and weird and crazy and out of character, it brought me to the sobering realization that more people had these cookies than should have, and the person who did this, the person who was responsible for smuggling these things into our systems, was not a very righteous soul indeed. And I don't know how long it took, and I honestly can't remember falling asleep on a fireplace, but I did, and I slept there for 12 hours on a fireplace. I mean, I had trouble sleeping on the floor, but, you know, on bricks, and I don't know. But when I woke up, I met with the remnants of the other people who were there, and we all kind of agreed it wasn't a very nice thing for him to do, and we all made long-distance calls back to the United States using his telephone, and we felt a little bit better about that, and then we escaped and never came back. That was one experience in Amsterdam. In retrospect, it's fun to look back on something like that, but while it was going on, it was scary. Really scary, and be careful if you get yourself into a situation like that. Because it had a happy ending, but sometimes people can do really crazy things. And you have to watch out for them and not put yourself in their hands. But that's a part of Amsterdam. One part. Now, there was something else in London that I wanted to mention. Just like in Monty Python, just like on the episodes on TV, the British love to apologize for things. Now, this is not a joke. This is true. In the subway station, the underground station, which is what they refer to it as, there was this sign. I took a picture of it because I knew I wanted to have this. A sign that says customer information, and then written in handwriting on a magic marker. It's like a white board. The person wrote this from Michael Scott, general manager of the Metropolitan Underground Line. My apologies to passengers who were subjected to lengthy delays on Tuesday evening, the 25th of July, on both the Metropolitan and Jubilee lines. The delay was caused by a Metropolitan train badly damaging five signals between Finchley Road and Willesden Green, causing the signals to remain at danger. This damage to equipment meant Metropolitan trains had to run over the Jubilee line for a period of time indefinitely, causing delays also to Jubilee passengers. I shall be putting my apologies in writing. These will be distributed to yourself at station entrances later. So, you see, I mean, that couldn't happen in New York. You don't even get an explanation in New York as to what's going on. Which is another thing. I went away for 6 weeks, and here I am back again, and there's a number 9 train? What's going on here? Who's responsible for this? A number 9 train? I mean, there isn't even a number 8 train as far as I know. When I left, there were only 7 lines on the IRT, and now they're up to number 9. I don't understand it. And, there's Q trains running on 8th Avenue. What's all that about? City falls apart when I go away for 6 weeks. Okay, the final thing I want to read from London is an article in the Evening Standard, which is a daily newspaper, one of the, daily news type of papers they have over there. And this concerns a situation which took place. I don't know if the news got back here, but it certainly was in all the papers over there. The events surrounding Carnival, which is an annual occurrence in London, and this it takes place in a part of London called Notting Hill. A lot of people get together and party and dance, play music, and all kinds of things like that. But historically, there have been troubles between the residents and the police. This particular time, there was a riot at the end of the carnival, and several people were injured, a lot of people were arrested, and it led to a bit of controversy over the future of this particular carnival. One Tory leader, I remember saying in a newspaper, or perhaps it was on radio, said, if these people want to have carnival so much, why don't they just go back to the Caribbean and do it? Can you imagine a government leader saying something like that. Well, he did. It was in all the papers. And nobody really made a big deal about it either, which was surprising. Well, this is an article that appeared in the Evening Standard and made me see it from a different light, which I'm glad someone finally had the guts to do. It's written by a man named Stan Gebler Davies. It's called The Riot Boys in Blue. It would be a terrible pity if the police, whom we have been brought up to admire and trust, should be reconstituted as an army on the continental model, an army whose poker-faced soldiers may not be addressed or questioned by citizens in the street without fear of arrest. I'm afraid that that is what is happening, and my fears were reinforced by my presence at the Notting Hill Carnival. I never saw so much filth, with a capital F, in all my life, if I may be allowed to use the term which is used affectionately by the citizenry to describe informally the guardians of their law. I wish to emphasize that it is the citizens' law. I mean that the law is ours. This being a democracy, we, the citizens, have made the law, and it is up to us to keep it. We employ the police, who are our servants, to ensure that those of us who are remiss or lax in keeping to the law are brought up short and held accountable. We do not, however, employ the police to interpret the law or act as moral guardians, nor should they be mustered by the thousands from time to time in order to intimidate those citizens whom they suspect might just possibly have it in mind to behave badly. That is what they were doing at Notting Hill. They were there in such fantastic, ludicrous strength that they managed to frighten themselves. I was with friends at a luncheon party in Lansdowne Road, which is on the very periphery of the parade. We ventured out often, either alone or in groups whose members soon lost one another, and made the sweaty circuit of the streets quite safely, buying plantain and jerk chicken and the odd can of beer. We were innocently engaged in enjoying ourselves. In the ancient, decent jargon of the police, we were going about our business. Of course, the people were mostly black. They were, in truth, almost entirely black. The festival has a fearsome reputation for anti-white hostility, which in my experience is unjustified. And it is a fact that white people are afraid of black people when they are in a black neighborhood. In parentheses, it pains me to say so, but I am of a generation brought up to believe that it was bad manners even to notice a person's color. That was a useful hypocrisy. About half the white people on the streets were wearing blue uniforms. It was an awful nonsense. There were rows of coppers everywhere to be seen. There were barricades and truncheons and bored coppers to be seen on every corner. Some streets were off-limits, except to residents. Since when may a street be declared off-limits to a free-born citizen? I don't recall reading that in constitutional law. A line of blue-clad constables, looking bored and witless, snaked interminably from one street to another. If you took a close look at them, you could see they were not real fuzz, but part-timers, some of them being about half the size of regulation-issue coppers, and others either excessively fat or excessively thin. The fellows with the shields and the horses were another matter, but there was no sign of them until dark, when they came like an army, armored and mounted. Then the earlier dubious image of the friendly copper telling you were not allowed to walk the public highway in England because it had been designated a safety area evaporated and was replaced by some fierce collective creature armed to the teeth like a French or American hit squad. I don't blame the police themselves. It isn't their fault. They have been told to behave like an army, and they are being given the equipment of an army. Their commanders have taken to referring to the rest of us as civilians, as if they were not civil servants themselves. I suppose it is our own fault for allowing assistant chief superintendents to appear on television explaining how they have just deployed 5,000 men in the fight against loose behavior. If you give the police a paramilitary function, I suppose you can scarcely complain if they use it. However, there will come a time when we will be sorry we gave them that function, as they must already be sorry themselves. The police used to be required to arrest wrongdoers after they had done it, but now we ask them to charge in regardless. I was at Notting Hill, and I know how peaceable it was. I have a dark suspicion that it was the police who rioted. I don't want to see that happen here. I don't know whether they frightened the criminals, but by God, they frightened me. A piece by Stan Gebler Davies in the London Evening Standard, Wednesday, August 30th, 1989. And I think that was a really powerful piece, especially in light of what was going on, the news stories that were being published around that time. Nobody said anything like this. It was all a riot that took place, and what must be done to stop such people from doing such horrible things. Well, I myself went over to Notting Hill and All Saints Road and spent an entire day there. This was a couple of days after Carnival, a couple of days after the riot. And incredibly peaceful, friendly neighborhood it was. Never at one time did I feel threatened in any way. However, after being there for a few hours, I was walking down the street, and suddenly, from the street I had just walked down, I heard shouts. And I turned around and I went back down the street, and these police had appeared out of nowhere and seemed quite intent on arresting this person. I can't imagine what it was he had done. I had just walked down the street only moments earlier, and these police were there, and they were insisting that he had done something so horrible that he had to be taken away right there and then. And I remember one of the things I heard one of the policemen saying he had done was obstructing justice. Now, that's a lovely phrase, isn't it? I mean, you can obstruct justice just by existing sometimes. Well, that's apparently what they were getting him for. I don't know, but the ever increasing crowd was getting louder and more outraged to see something like this happen yet again. It was obviously not the first time. More police came. Before you knew it, there were about 24 of them. Came out of nowhere. They apparently had been in the neighborhood the whole time in plainclothes cars, because that's what they pulled up in. And I was very surprised at the restraint shown by the community. People were watching from windows. People were shouting at the policemen. But for the most part, they were trying to ask them why they were doing what they were doing. Not getting a satisfactory answer, but at least not getting any more violence or any more arrests. They did take that one person away. I don't know what became of it. But as far as I know, there were no further incidents that day. But it was a sobering experience for me, because I saw how these people feel. These people who live in this neighborhood, they feel as if they're under occupation by the police. Every single one of the policemen that I saw, and a couple of police women too, were these blonde-haired, blue-eyed, fair-skinned, completely out-of-place people. How better to make a crowd of folks who live in a certain neighborhood feel as if they are being victimized? Which, indeed, they were. Based on what I saw. Now, I don't know all the facts here, because I was a visitor to the area, but it did put it all in perspective, and it made me realize how the media there can get things just as fouled up and wrong as the media here, in reporting stories like Tompkins Square and the plight of the homeless and that kind of thing. And leads me into a song. Yes, it leads me into a musical piece that I had heard many times before. It was a favorite piece of mine, in fact, from Big Audio Dynamite, which is the band that I said I would play some more pieces from. And this indeed is a very rare piece, because while it appeared on a record last year, The Battle of All Saints Road, which now has new meaning for me, I now know what the song means. It's all about the carnival and the battle between the police and the folks who live in the neighborhood. However, the version I have now was not put on the record. It was never put on any record, in fact, and this is coming to you from a tape. So let's give a listen. Big Audio Dynamite and the rare, never-before-heard version of the Battle of All Saints Road here on listener-supported WBAI New York. And if you want to see future programs and alternative ideas and discussion call-in programs and things like that, please give us a call now and pledge your support. 279-3400. We have volunteers standing by, and they will be happy to take your call. Please make the phone ring and get their blood flowing again. 279-3400, area code 212. Here's Big Audio Dynamite.
No matter what the people say, these sounds lead the way.
With all Ruger. isn't it?
Let's find it with slumber. Put it on again.
The truth is weak and weary, rations running low. Mission seemed impossible, we had to save the show. Lost our mask of comfort, empty's got a hole. David took the liar, little rock and roll. Rewind, operator, gonna get him with sound. Falling out, murderous.
Play football.